Hello, I'm Steve Wiggins, and this is podcast number 23 of the Sex and Violence in the Ancient World blog. Today's topic is atonement. To understand the issue of atonement and how it works in the ancient world, we have to first get a sense of where the concept of angry gods comes from. It's almost a trite oversimplification of the biblical worldview that somehow God is an angry character in the Hebrew Bible, but in many instances the text seems to bear out this divine anger. To get to the root of it, we have to consider once again where the origin of this concept might lie. The Israelites were not the first people to exist in the ancient world with this concept of a God who is angry. The earliest Israelites were not even truly monotheistic. Monotheism is something that develops later during the exilic period, and during the early stages of their development, they, like most ancient people, believed that there were multiple gods, and that was a way of explaining tragedy in the world. When you have things that don't go your way, crops that don't grow in due season, too much rain, too little rain, for people who depend very closely on the ability of the land to produce their daily needs, this can only be explained as the wrath of a god. God is angry at you, or a god is angry at you, and that's why your crops don't grow or why things are going badly for you. Again, trying to get a sense of their world, we have to keep in mind that many people in the ancient world experienced nature in a way that most of us in the modern world do not. It's pretty unusual for us to be caught, for example, in a rainstorm outdoors. Not only a rainstorm, but say a violent thunderstorm. It's pretty rare for that to happen these days. Sometimes, though, when we have that experience, we start to understand just how violent nature can seem to those who would have not had the recourse to snug buildings with glass windows like we do. The storms, we go inside, we shut the windows, and we're muffled a little bit from the sound and the apparent danger of the storm. I've twice been camping when severe thunderstorms broke out, and being aware that only a thin layer of nylon separates you from this terrible loud thunder and this very bright lightning that's far too vivid and far too present helps you to understand why ancient people believed that perhaps gods were angry at them. When we look at the societies that existed before ancient Israel, especially prominent in the Mesopotamian societies of ancient Assyria and Babylonia, the gods that were most feared and most revered tended to be storm gods, gods associated with the sky and with thunder and lightning. And so it's no surprise that these gods appear angry. If you've experienced the thunderstorm, you know what an angry god is like. They had no recourse to science or meteorology to explain their world, and in fact, their world wasn't at all what we would think of as a natural world. Their world was a world that was populated with gods, and gods explained things, and gods were ways of explaining things that otherwise had no explanation. And so, if your world involves this kind of severe weather, then, of course, gods are angry. That may be a bit simplistic, but it does, I think, touch on the very basic heart of the issue. And we see this carrying over into the region of ancient Syria, what was called Aram in the ancient world. And they were Israel's neighbors just to the north, and so they would have been believing similar things stands to reason in the area where Israel also developed. And when they came into that region and came to understand what the gods were, who the gods were, the angry god, the storm god, became part of it. In the Hebrew Bible, it's pretty clear that Yahweh himself is at times a storm god. He takes over that role from Baal. And when he does, he also becomes the angry god. Now, angry gods require some sort of appeasement. And this is where the concept of atonement comes from. In the last podcast, we spoke about the concept of sacrifice and where it ultimately comes from, or some possible explanations for where it might come from. And so in thinking about that again, I mentioned at the end of that podcast that atonement was a concept that was tied into this overall matrix of ideas that we come to think of as sacrifice or appeasing the gods. So let's talk about how atonement fits into it. When you offer a sacrifice, you shed blood. That's a necessary part of it. In the ancient world, blood has a very specific kind of connotation of pollution associated with it. They believed that the world itself could be polluted by too much bloodshed, because blood is the source of life. The Bible says the life is in the blood. So the vitality of an animal or a person is represented by this blood. And the spilling of blood, therefore, is a cause of pollution or defilement. And a defiled situation is one in which a god cannot be present. It's almost like an atomic reaction takes place when a holy god comes into the presence of a polluted or unclean environment. You just have to keep things separate. The problem with this is that in order to cleanse an environment or to cleanse a person or an object, you need to offer a sacrifice. And offering a sacrifice causes bloodshed. And bloodshed, of course, will in itself be a pollutant. You've got basically a catch-22 developing here, where no matter what you do, you're going to lead to some kind of pollution, even if the solution to that pollution is by giving a sacrifice. Ancient people didn't have quite the necessity or urgency of logical explanation that we do, but it seems that they were aware that this kind of cyclical nature of sacrifice leading to pollution and sacrifice being necessary to take away pollution did leave a residue, if you will, of doubt in their minds about how to handle this. One solution to that is to have the concept of atonement. Atonement basically is being put right with God, and the concept goes back to the old idea of the Day of Atonement. This is described in the book of Leviticus, and the idea behind it is that it is a day of making right. Yom Kippur is the modern Hebrew name for the Day of Atonement. And Kippur has the connotations, as far as we can tell, of wiping clean. So it's atonement in that sense of the word is erasing the record, making that which was unclean clean. So that on that one day a year of the year, that one day, the record is made clean. The slate is wiped completely clean, so that the blood that has been shed in the course of the year to atone for bloodshed has also been in some way negated. It's also the one day a year when blood is taken into the Holy of Holies and sprinkled before the Ark of the Covenant, again demonstrating its utter sanctity and complete unusual nature, because otherwise no one goes into the Holy of Holies, and certainly you don't use blood to clean things. So this shows that this day was unlike any other. It was a day in which a special kind of circumstance had to take place in order to set things right with God. One of the unusual aspects about the Day of Atonement is that it involved a number of different sacrifices, and one of those sacrifices is the scapegoat. The scapegoat was an animal, a goat obviously, brought into the confines of the temple, or tabernacle as it's described in the Pentateuch. The sins of Israel are confessed over the head of this goat. The hands of the priests and representatives of the community are laid on its head, and the scapegoat is sent out into the desert for Azazel. Azazel probably being some kind of demonic presence that was believed to live in the wilderness. The goat dies in the wilderness and therefore takes the sins away from the people of Israel. The concept actually seems to have its origin among the Hittites, who practiced a similar sort of ritual. Whether the Israelites knew of it from the Hittites or whether it was just part of the larger cultural sphere, we don't know. But we do know that it's not something unique to Israel to send a guilt-laden animal away to take away the sins. Its symbolic value is obviously very potent, the idea that you can send an animal away who can take that sin that you have as a community with him is a very powerful one. But it also does raise the question about how do you resolve the difficulties, the mental difficulties that are in place of having a sacrificial system that is going to try to make God pleased for something that you have done wrong. That's a very tricky kind of issue. There are really two different words that are used to describe the process, if you will, in the Hebrew Bible. They're not actually Hebrew Bible words. They're later words that are used to try to explain by theologians what's going on in the context of the sacrificial system. And one of those words is propitiation. Propitiation is a word that means literally to go forward, but the basic idea behind it is to render something favorable. Now, why do you need to render something favorable? Well, the only real answer to that is because God is angry. Something has angered God, therefore God needs to be put in a frame of mind to be appeased or to make things right. The basic idea of atonement is also that. In the English usage of the word, it is setting things right, bringing someone back into favor. And so, in order to bring people back into favor when God is angry, you have to offer sacrifice. That's the way that God chooses to do it. Now, if you wonder about the reason that sacrifice might be a solution to a problem like that, please listen to my previous podcast where I address the issue of where sacrifice comes from. But the basic idea is that every society in the ancient world knew that what gods required was sacrifice, and therefore, if you are guilty of any kind of infraction, you need to offer a sacrifice because that's what gods expect. So you do it because the gods demand it. Another fancy word that gets associated with this idea of sacrifice and its usage in the ancient world is the word expiation. It's a word that's used actually in the Christian scriptures. It occurs in at least one of Paul's letters. I can't remember off the top of my head just how many times he might use the word. But the idea behind expiation is somewhat different than propitiation. Expiation actually comes from a couple of words meaning to compensate for a wrong, or essentially to completely appease is the idea. Why are we appeasing? Well, again, it goes back to the concept of the angry God. This idea is that God is angry about something, presumably some sort of sin or infraction, and therefore needs to be appeased. How do you appease God? Give him a present. Still works today. When somebody's angry with you, you can always give a present, and that will make them more favorably inclined towards you. This may seem very human as an approach to how to deal with difficulties. Why don't we have some more sublime or transcendent way of dealing with God? The fact is, in the biblical world, there is no such theological nicety involved in trying to make amends with God in some spiritual way. It's a very earthy way of understanding what God requires. Now, coming back to the idea of the scapegoat. This idea was picked up in early Christianity as well. After all, the idea is that, according to the Christian scriptures, that Jesus was a sinless human, and according to some interpretations as well, also divine. And so, as a sinless person, or a son of God, how could he possibly be a sacrifice for us, those of us who are mundane people? The answer was that this had to become a form of substitutionary atonement, which is to say that the one who deserves to die, the ones, I should say, all of us, according to this way of thinking, don't actually have to pay the price. Instead, what we have here is a God who pays the price for us. So we have been substituted for, And so Jesus' death, according to this way of thinking, is a substitutionary form of atonement. God is appeased by the one death, even though that death does not occur to those who deserve to die. This concept has been used in Christianity for many, many centuries as an explanation for why the death of Jesus was sufficient for everybody else. We have all paid that price because he paid the price. That's the way the thinking goes. But at the root of it, it goes back to the basic idea that we were talking about in the last podcast, which is that God requires a sacrifice from us. And that sacrifice is because of things that we as human beings have done wrong. The idea is a very ancient one. It goes back to the most ancient of societies. And if we can understand the concept of sacrifice and understand that atonement was the desired result of that sacrifice, we can get a better sense of where the ideas come from in the modern world and ask ourselves the question of whether they really serve to answer some of the complicated questions that arise in today's world as to whether or not sacrifice is really the way that we can move forward in our understanding of what is required of people in the face of an angry God.